Welcome to the HIV Australia podcast, a discussion about the community-led response to HIV. In this latest episode, Jimmy Chen from the National Association of People with HIV Australia talks with Carlos, who migrated from Chile and shares their experiences accessing healthcare for culturally and linguistically diverse people living with HIV.
Hello, my name is Jimmy. My pronouns is he, him. I'm the Networks Project Officer from National Association of People with HIV Australia, which is known as NAPWA. To begin today's podcast, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owner of the land upon which I work and live, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. I also want to acknowledge and pay my respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are listening to this podcast. In this episode, we will be talking about the unique experience of culturally and linguistically diverse people in Australia and also their journey with HIV. It's worth noting that Australia has had a very effective HIV response that focuses on the HIV community and use the skills and knowledge of people living with HIV to solve the complex social and health issues that come with HIV. And as most listeners will know, Australia is also made up of many diverse communities from around the world and welcomes all walks of life. In this podcast, one of play member Carlos has been kind enough to tell us more about his experience with coming to Australia and how HIV has affected him. Carlos is a passionate advocate originally from Chile. He moved to Australia in 2018. Their advocacy journey began in 2020 after being diagnosed. Committed to inclusivity, Carlos has found their voice by sharing their lived experience and promoting diversity within the HIV community, co-founding the Positive Latinx Australian Network, which is known as PLAN. They believe in empowering one another to create meaningful change. Hello, Carlos. How are you today?
Hi, Jimmy. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining this podcast today. To begin with, can I ask what's your pronouns?
I'm not really there yet. Like, I'm still trying to pronouns don't work for me. So I take any pronouns, like he, she, they. Like, yeah, so yeah.
No worries, thank you. So to jump into the first question, could you please tell us more about where your journey began and how it brought you to Australia, please?
Yeah, so growing up, I always wanted to travel and I never had the resources. So it was always like this dream that I never thought I was going to achieve. But when I finished uni, I got this chance of traveling and I moved to Ireland in Europe for 1 year. I live in Dublin. And I thought that was like my life adventure and stuff. And I went back to Chile and I kind of wanted more. So from there, I started working and saving. And 2 years after, I got a postgraduate visa to move in here in Australia. So that's what I did. I started like industrial engineering, so I came with a postgraduate visa, but I did not end up like working in my field.
No worries. It must be quite a journey to living in different country from Ireland and then move to Australia. So what's some of the barriers that you had to overcome when you arrived in Australia?
I feel like obviously like leaving your network behind, it's challenging because I'm a confident person, but I need people to validate my decisions. So I can do that through a phone call, a text message, but I realize how much I rely on like my supporting network. And that's something that you lose on a daily basis. you don't have people that know you to say like, oh yes, you know, like you would like that or no, that's not good for you. So that was a struggle for me. And also, you know, like when you move to another country, and I realized this recently, that I developed a lot of skills and knowledge and networked in my country. But once you move here, you lose all that. You don't know how to find a job. You don't know, like, you know, like how, what's, you know, how to make a proper resume. And there's all this knowledge that it's not something that you learn like online. It's just like intrinsic in the culture. And I lost all that moving here. And it wasn't, I've been 4 years here. And I think like, I realized like now that I needed to build all that knowledge again. So yeah, I will say that's like the biggest challenge to like rebuild yourself.
Yes, I think so as a person who come from a different country, I also feel the same as well, especially when applying for jobs, like to properly act, like to work on the resume is actually quite challenging. And also while answering the selection criteria, I guess it's also another challenging part as well. Because English is also my second language. Yeah. So when I work on those things, it's actually half of the time, it's really struggling me to answer those questions. So, yeah, I totally understand that feeling.
Yeah, and also, can I add something? Sorry. And also, like my English is all right. Like I feel it's, I can like express my ideas and feelings, but it takes one person that doesn't understand me that like starts off doubting myself completely, even though I've been like communicated in English for like 4 years now. It's one person with a thick accent or one person that's not used to a Latin accent. And I start like self-doubting myself and I start making all these mistakes. And it's something that happens once in a while. So it's also like you lose that confidence. It comes and goes, but like, yeah, it's not like it's something that fluctuates.
Yes. So when did HIV cross your path and what was your initial experience with your diagnosis?
Yes, so before coming here, I never got tested. I had a few sex partners and they were all like in long relationships. I did know that I needed to get tested, but it's a bit tricky in Chile, so like I never did it. And I started doing it here every 3 months as it was recommended. And then one day I got sick, so I went to the clinic and to the sex health center, and they diagnosed me with gonorrhea. I needed to go a month after for a control, and I went there, but because I didn't book an appointment, I didn't see a doctor. So in my head, I was like, oh yeah, I came, and that was it. So then for the next control, it was right the week of the first lockdown. So I missed that visit, and then I waited 3 more months to go again. So 6 months after I was diagnosed with gonorrhea, I went again, and then I received a call saying that I needed to go there, like to discuss about my results. So when I went there is when they told me I was living with HIV.
I see. When you visit the clinic, were you expecting the message, or you were just more focusing on maybe it was just about gonorrhea results?
So because I had the previous experience of being diagnosed with gonorrhea, I knew that they just send you a text message. So I thought something was wrong that time. And this was on a Friday. So they told me, you can either come now or just wait until until Monday. And I thought I don't think I can wait 3 days. I'm going now. So, and I ride my bike everywhere and I lived like 15 minutes from the sex health center. So on the way, I was thinking, what's the worst thing that can happen? Like, why did they need me to go there? And in my head, the worst thing was HIV. So I started thinking, oh, it's HIV, what am I going to do? And I was like thinking ahead of what was going to be diagnosed with HIV. It's like, are they going to give? And I realized that I didn't know much things. I knew it was still like a death sentence anymore. But I was thinking, are they going to give me like medication? Is this going to be like expensive? So by the time I got there, they told me, oh, we need to talk about your HIV results. And you know, like it's in the, I always say that it's in the movies when like something bad happens and all the noises around you are like in a slow speed. It's like everything fades. And, you know, I could feel my heart beating quick. And I was like, oh no, like I was right. This was it. And the doctor was talking in the background and all I could hear was like, wah, 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 wah. So I told the doctor, can we stop? Like I need like 5 minutes. Let me record this so I can like listen to it later. I think someone gave me water and then I was like, okay, no. And I think because of the shock, I kind of repressed all those feelings. And I was like, okay, like tell me everything I need to know. And I just focus on like in the words that the doctor was telling me.
Okay. That must be very confronting. And also while you're processing like on the way to the health, sexual health clinic and also after hear your diagnosis, so back in the time, earlier you mentioned about like with the language barrier, you sometimes can lose the confidence. And can I ask you, whenever you visit like sexual health clinic before or maybe after your diagnosis, do you feel you're confident enough to say you understand all the medical terms or whenever they're giving you some HIV prevention information?
Yeah, there's something interesting about Spanish and medical terms because I feel like they're very similar. It's like they can say it in English and I can kind of understand what it means in Spanish. But because I second doubt myself, I always ask 2, 3, or 4 times if I really need to, until I'm pretty sure that I understood the idea. Or when you go and need to explain something, I plan it also like a few times. So I make sure that the doctors or the nurses understand me. But yeah, but it's like, it's confronting and it makes you feel like I don't know if the word is uncomfortable, but you're like, I feel like I'm annoying because I'm like repeating things over and over.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a bit of doubt.
I see. The following questions, did your HIV diagnosis allow you to connect with other people living with HIV, maybe during your early diagnosis days?
Yes. So that day that I was diagnosed, I used to like go for walks with friends that live near me because it was everything during the lockdown. So there was a friend I was going to meet for a walk and I told him, I can't meet, I'm going to the sex clinic. And then this friend instantly went and waited for me outside the sex clinic. So when I went out, I told him that happened and I disclosed it to him. And it felt so good to like say it out loud. So when I got home, then I told my roommates straight away and it also felt good. So there was something that I noticed that it was good to, something about disclosing to my friends made me feel good. So I started saying it more and more and like there was like close friends, there was like friends in Chile, then colleagues. And while I was doing that, some people were telling me that they were also positive. People that I have met for years or people back in Chile, they will be like, oh yeah, like I live with HIV too, you're going to be all right. And it was so interesting to, you know, like it was a surprise for me that people I consider like close friends never like talked about it. So yeah, I got to connect with people that they were not close friends, but like orbitated around me. So yeah, that was, and it was good. Even on social media, I connected with people and it was a good first encounter.
It's a very positive outcome and I'm really glad to hear that because when during like early diagnosis, to disclose your HIV status sometimes can be quite challenging. You don't know who to talk with. You don't know if you should disclose to your close friends. Like maybe sometimes people will second doubt in terms of will myself like benefit from disclose my status to the friends. But yeah, it's really a positive outcome.
Yeah.
So I understand you're a member of PLAN. Could you Please tell us more about how you came across PLAN and why is it important for you to connect with the community that is built for you?
Yeah.
And what sort of the benefits of it?
Yeah. So before that, I would like to say that for me, like the diagnosis was quite good. Like it wasn't shocking. Like I didn't, you know, it was like I have like good coping mechanism, a healthy coping mechanism. So I think it was all right for me. And during lockdowns, there was this project that it was, I don't remember the name, but it was like these community conversations. And it was just Latinos that we all met online. And we discussed, we were all living with HIV and we all discussed about the challenges of living with HIV here in Australia. And it was until then that I didn't realize how difficult things were going to be for me if I wanted to have a PR, like a permanent resident visa, or like the challenges that I hadn't faced yet and how other like people from my community were struggling because they were isolated. They didn't have like a supportive network. And that really touched me because I have always volunteered in many causes, but it was always from the privileged, like, oh, I can help you with whatever. So this was the first time that I was part of the community and you know, something clicked in me and I was like, I can volunteer for my community. Like I can like share my skills or like together we can, you know, like do something. And from these conversations, which it was an APWA project, they decided that they needed to create like a community for Latinos living with HIV in Australia. And I don't know why, but like someone reached me asking if I wanted to take part of it. And I said, yes, right away. And then since then we've been working, slowly working and like, you know, like working on terms of reference, our goals and yeah, all that governance.
Yes. So before with like Positive Latinx Australian Network, which is known as PLAN, did you connect with any other South American background community as well?
Yeah, as I said before, like there were people that told me they were living with HIV when I was sharing my status, and they are okay with it. They don't engage with the community because they think they're all right, or they don't need, you know, like be part of the positive community. So that's on one side, like friends of friends. And then on the other side, because I was so like social and friendly, I really wanted to engage with the community. People in the HIV sector were always introducing me with another Latinos. And yeah, so I know a few that are like around there that live here in Victoria, Sydney. But yeah, it was never like, it was like, hey, this person is also from South America and they also live with HIV. And it's like, oh yeah, cool. And you know, like we will talk in Spanish, like share a few things and that would be, it wouldn't like go further than that. Yeah.
And so with the following question, probably will be slightly heavier. So can I ask, what impact has your HIV diagnosis had on your journey in Australia so far?
So there's this challenge, I will say, about as immigrants, you know, like we can't call home the places we live because, you know, that can be taken away if you, you know, like if someone rejects your visa or like you know, like I have heard so many stories of people like getting their visa canceled and like having to go back to their countries. So it's hard to, you know, like even saying out loud that you want to stay in this country, it's tricky because you also, at least I don't want to, in the beginning, I didn't want to say it because if I didn't get my visa, it would be like, it would mean that I failed. And I didn't want people to know that I failed. So I was like, I don't know, maybe I wanna try to stay. But it was because I was not confident in what I wanted. And also knowing that, you know, getting a visa here, it's very difficult and there are like so many factors. So when I was diagnosed with HIV and then I was aware that the challenges that that means to the visa, it was that I feel that was the biggest impact that I felt. I was thinking, oh my God, like even if I have everything, like already all the, you know, like from all the visas that I could apply, now I can already do the work that have the health waiver. And, you know, in order to apply to those visa, I need all these requirements that at the moment I don't have. So I felt that my options were super limited. And I remember at one point I was thinking, what I'm going to, like, maybe I shouldn't even try to stay. Because, you know, I can, all the time I'm going to invest, all the money, all, you know, it's like, it's exhausting. And I don't know if at the end I will be able to stay. Even though that's what I wanted. I mean, I still want to. So I feel like overcoming, I think it's a fear, overcoming that fear of failing. It was, I think it was like a big impact, and I needed to work a lot on what I wanted and steps to at least try to stay. Yeah.
May I ask you, so you are currently applying for visa, am I correct? Or
I'm with the student visa at the moment, and I was going to follow the path with the point system to the self-nominee myself. But now my partner said that we could try to get the partner visa. So yeah, that we recently started to we registered the relationship. And I've heard before that there's like organizations that help you, that, you know, like support, like lawyers that support. And I thought it was going to be send an email, contact them, and like they will help me. But I've now realized that there's a lot of people trying to get access to those to that support. So it's not as easy as I thought it would be. You're like sending an email or just calling is not enough. So now it's like, oh, maybe I need to get like a private lawyer, which means that I need to get like more money. And you know, like the partner visa is already like expensive. So yeah, I'm like figuring out how to navigate that. But that's my plan. Yeah.
So while you are applying for visa, so the following questions probably kind of can relate. So have you experienced any stigma or discrimination? And if so, what do you think we can do to change this?
I don't think, but is that question related to visas or in general?
I think it's very open, like with visa, or can be your personal experience during like maybe on dating app or maybe.
If like I continue with the previous topic, I feel discriminated by having to prove, you know, like the health waiver process. I think that's discrimination against people living with HIV, because everyone that have the visa have proven that we should not be treated differently. So I feel like that's a, I don't know how to call it, but it's like it's some sort of discrimination that is not pointed to me, but like to the whole community. Anyone that lives with HIV here, it's been treated differently. But personally, I don't, on dating apps, I haven't been attacked or questioned, but people have been like asking me like, how did I get it? Or like very personal questions, just because I have my status on my profiles in dating apps, which is not confronting for me because I'm like very open, and I don't mind educating people, but I do feel like with a different mindset, those situations could have been like very, very confronting.
So before your diagnosis, have you met any person living with HIV before?
No, I mean, this is a bit weird, but I was always interested in HIV. So whenever I saw someone that on Grindr or some will have like the HIV positive, I will miss, like I really wanted to know how it was, because as I said, I was interested in HIV, and everything you read or know is like in the 80s or in the 90s. So I always wanted to know how it's to live with HIV now, but I never got to meet anyone. So before I was people around, and you know, sometimes at least in Chile, there's gossip around that, oh, that guy lives with HIV, but there was nothing ever like confirmed.
Mm-hmm. So back then, before your diagnosis, what do you wish you had known when you first arrived in Australia about HIV?
So I went to a Catholic school, so the sex education I got was, you know, straight and Catholic. And when I started like my sex life, I did educate myself, but I said that with the sources that I found in Chile that are also not as educated as here. So I wish someone had told me, because, you know, like I was hanging out with Australians or people that have been here for a while. So they were all on prep and there were all these things that they knew and they will share sometimes in conversations. So I was kind of by osmosis learning these things. But I wish someone had told me these guys know all these things because they had a different sexual education. And now that I'm having, now that I changed my behavior and I've like completely changed my demographic, I should like update my knowledge about that, which I didn't. So I wish someone had told me that.
So can I ask, when you live in Ireland, were you aware about PrEP or HIV information or not really?
Not really. When I went to, when I lived in Ireland, most of my friends were straight because it was the people I met. I was studying English, so it was the people that I met there. So it was, you know, like, I don't think I met many gay people. I was on dating apps, but it was, you know, like, I remembered seeing on Grindr that people were on PrEP. And I remember like studying that and like researching. I was like, oh, like that's, yeah, like I knew existed, but I never thought about getting access to PrEP.
And so after your arrival in Australia, you starting to get tested like in terms of STI, HIV. Is there any chance while you getting tested, did any of health professionals they mention about, oh, maybe you should start taking PrEP or giving you some information about it?
Yeah, they mentioned it, but my behavior around sex was changing because I was also exploring like my gender and I was exploring my sexuality. So I was doing more and more stuff. So I think, I think it was lucky that it was in the beginning of this journey that I got HIV. I feel that like if it had happened like maybe a few months later, I would have like gotten access to PrEP, because before it happened, I was feeling that I was not being like, I used to think that I was not that sexually active compared with friends or people I knew. I was like, oh no, like I might hook up once in a while, and I was always like protecting myself, so I thought it was not for me. And you know, like I feel like I took risks a few times while I was like either like drinking alcohol, and it was things that I will regret and take it like be extra careful next times. But then again, I will like drink again, and I'll, you know, like you're not as careful. And yeah, and actually, like if I had, I don't know if this is on part of the conversation, but if I had known that PEP existed, I would have taken it because I knew that I didn't have safe sex, and I was like, oh, I should have, you know, I trusted a person that said it was on PrEP, but like the day after, I was thinking, oh, maybe she I was like, okay, I took a risk and that was it. But if I had known, I would have taken PEP, and I don't think I would have contracted HIV.
Do you find sometimes trusting people on dating app? Sorry, I might just rephrase the questions. Give me 1 second.
I know. I think I know what you're trying to ask. I used to trust people when they told me that they were on PrEP, and I never thought. I always thought, oh, well, if you're on PrEP, I'm safe. And now I understand that they take PrEP so they are safe, but it doesn't mean that they're safe, because some people that take it on demand might do it in the wrong way, or some people might not, you know, like that, or they think that, I don't know, like they might lie, they can just stop it. So I feel like I was trusting people instead of protecting myself. And it happens like a lot. Like looking back, I was like, oh my God, I trusted so many people because they were on prep that I thought was all right.
Do you find it easier to trust in someone else when you're having sex with people? I mean, so back then, do you always discussion about HIV status before you're having sex, or kind of depends?
So if I'm dating someone, I will tell them because it's I'm very active in the community, so it's I can't just hide that because you know I have meetings, I go there, I have like it's HIV, it's like a big part of my life, so I don't think I could hide that. And B, it's also I feel like if you're gonna like start something, it could be a friendship or relationship or just like a fuck buddy, but like if you care about this person, I think it's for me, I'm just talking for myself, I think it's important that I tell them because it's I don't want to like be involved with someone that is not willing to change their mind about HIV, or they might have like a negative attitude towards. So for me, it's important to know before than after. But when it's casual sex, I don't think it's relevant because, as I said before, if this person is looking after themselves, they don't need to know like what I do. And I know that I'm on medication and I'm on detectables and I get tested regularly. So I know I'm not gonna be a risk for those sex partners. Yeah.
Okay. So with the following questions, so do you think it is harder for people born overseas to get access to HIV services in Australia? And if so, why?
I think it's, as I said before, in Chile, it's a bit tricky to get tested because you need to go to, it's not like a sex clinic, it's like a normal, you know, health center, and they treat you differently because this I think it's around stigma and sex shame that you're using resources so you can have fun. So even if you don't think like that, you assume that's all you know. So then you move here to Australia and they're like this sex clinic that I never heard of them before. I was like, oh wow, like a health center just for like sex, that's amazing. And then if you know that they existed, it's even more surprising that they are for free, because then you think, maybe for citizens, and no, it's like for any resident. So unless you know someone that teach you these things, it's very hard to come up with the idea that you just by the fact that you live here you have access to all these benefits. Mm-hmm. So it's access to knowledge or friends that, you know, like are happy to share those kind of things.
I see. So kind of looking back to your first visit to testing for HIV and also STI,
do I answer the question?
Yes, feel free to go with it.
Okay, so regarding the difference between, you know, like immigrants in Australia and like getting access related to HIV, before my diagnosis, I was like, oh, okay, like if I can go to this sex health center, like get tested for free, I'm just gonna go, why not? And then when I got diagnosed with gonorrhea, I was like, oh, it's like, I was like mind blown that it, well, that was like surprised that was possible. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it's like the benefit of like a first world country. But then when I got diagnosed, on the first session, I was told that I was going to get access to medication. But I remember that they told me that it was not 100% sure because I didn't have access to Medicare. So they told me that they need to first, like, you know, like get blood tests and see like what medication they will give me. And I remember that the nurse was saying that someone was going to evaluate my case. So she's saying that she could not tell me that it was 100% sure that I was going to get medication, but it was likely. So, you know, it's like having, even if it was like 1% chance of not getting it, I was thinking like, what's going to make the difference? Like, what are people that are not getting like access to medication? And as a first encounter with that, it was like very like scary. Luckily, they told me, oh, no, you have access through this program that is called Compassionate Access. So this also makes you feel like, oh, someone's having compassion for my case because I'm not a citizen, and someone's like, I'm like this charity case, and that's why they're giving me like access to medication. So it also feels like you don't, it's not your right. It feels like you're like taking it from someone, and as you know, it's like this feeling of being an imposter. It's like, you know, it's like a very weird feeling of being like, oh yeah, they're gonna help me, but why are they helping me? It's like, you know, it's a bit tricky. And when I was diagnosed, they told me, I remember the doctor said, oh yeah, we can look after your physical health. And it was my responsibility to look after my mental health. And the doctor said that they can refer me to services. I remember it was like a council sessions and also like a peer navigation program, which obviously I was like, yes, please, I need help. I'm in shock. Let's do that. And my counselor was good because I've been in therapy before, and I could think, oh yeah, she's good. But also talking about your feelings in your second language is very difficult, because I can notice that I behave differently in Spanish than in English. So even like going to therapy in English was, because like my personality in English is a bit more cold, and I think it has to something to do with the culture here. So when I was in the counseling sessions, I was, you know, I will be talking, and I was like expressing how I felt and navigating like my journey, and then I will end up the session and be thinking, it feels like there's things that I didn't say, but I was not restricting myself. And I had this feeling of there's something off, and I knew it was not the therapist. I knew it was not me. And then I called my therapist, the Spanish one, and the way that session went, and I was like, it's the language. It's like, it's the way I express or I connect with feelings. It would change. Like there's some, I can't explain it, but there's something that makes you feel different. And then I asked, is it possible to have like counseling sessions in Spanish? And it was not an option. And I joined this program, the peer navigation program. And I have a peer that is amazing. She was Sarah Figan. She is amazing. Like she was so good. Like I was like very happy to connect with her every week. But there was also something about like doing it in English that I could feel it. That was like, I will question myself, how will this be if it was in Spanish? Or how will this be if it was someone, it doesn't matter that they don't speak Spanish, but like understand my culture? Because sometimes I will say something and I will be like, ah, yeah, I have to explain you this because in my country, this means that we do this. So like investing time in explaining those things, it kind of like distracts you from the important point of the, when you like get access to the services.
Yes. Yeah. So far, from what I can understand, it's really positive after your diagnosis to connect all different of like services. But could you tell me how would you describe your experience with HIV related services, please? Would you say it's amazing, positive, or there's some part of it probably you would like to hope that you will be improved?
So I'm a very optimistic person. I'm always like looking at the bright side of things. But like looking back now, I feel like I feel that the fact that it's in like designed by, I don't want to say white people, but designed by white people, it makes it different. Because it's like they think they know your needs. They think like, oh yeah, you know, like immigrants are all the same. But like they're wrong. Like I feel like these services were designed by people that know not just your language, but your culture or what it means to be an immigrant, it would completely change the impact of those services. Because there's like lived experiences there that these people can can't relate. Like even if they know people, even if they've been like working in the sector for years, they haven't experienced that. And I think there's something there that Australian is lacking at the moment.
So with the following questions, what advice would you give to other culturally and linguistically diverse people living with HIV?
I will advise them not to isolate. There aren't a lot of people in the sector or in different areas that they can relate to or get support from. And, you know, allow themselves to connect with the community, because it's I always say that growing up, I never have like a role models about being a queer person. When I finally met them, I felt like so comfortable around them, and I could like express myself and be more confident within myself. The same thing happened with HIV. Like your family can be supportive, your friends can be supportive, like even at your work, they can be all right with it. But it's not until you meet people that lives with HIV and like have like more things in common with you that you get to really like navigate and explore like very deep things. I don't know, it's like sharing with people that understand you on that level is like very, yeah, it's very, I don't know the word, it's like very, like warm is like, you know, they get you, you get them, it's like very good, yeah.
Yes. By the way, in terms of the feeling, you can also use it in Spanish as well.
The word that I couldn't find now.
Yeah. So the kind of a words when you meet another person living with HIV, sharing this similar background that you have. What is the feeling?
I'm gonna translate it, but like you feel that your heart is warm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like in Spanish. If you are speaking to another person who's speaking Spanish, what words would you use?
Let me think. I have troubles going back to Spanish when I've been speaking English. So give me 1 second here.
It's okay.
Yeah, no, I cannot think of the word. So it's just like a nice feeling. Like you feel like it's like maybe it's like you belong.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds great.
It's not Spanish, but that's the word. Yeah.
So it's towards the end of this podcast. So it's really great to have you to sharing your experience today from your before and also after diagnosis and also afterward assessing different HIV-related services. But also with a little bit difficulties in terms of visa process. In the future, if you look into the next 6 months, what would you hope to happen for people who speak in Spanish background living with HIV?
Okay, so because I'm part of plan and we're working to, you know, like grow this network and, you know, like find the challenges and hopefully get some support from different organizations, I will hope that in 6 more months we can, you know, have a network of people that Latinos that they feel belong to and they can relate and ask for help and be this voice. So we can, you know, like feel like we found like a play, like family. Yeah.
So earlier that you mentioned about the help, can I ask you what sort of the help that you think will be important?
I will say that it sounds basic, but it's just like having that information like in your language, because I have seen things that have been translated and so many things get lost in translation. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be whatever help is like written, like websites or whatever, it has to be done by someone that it's doing it in your language, it's not translated from someone, and it's like it's giving you like their expertise. That because it's as I said before, it's like you know what it means, you know what the differences or like the common fears of people. But yeah, like more information and more like easy access to services. sometimes it gets like a very bureaucratic.
Yeah. So thank you so much for your contribution today, Carlos, and I appreciate your experience as a person living with HIV and as part of the culturally and linguistically diverse person community. And thanks to the online audience listening to this podcast. My name is Jimmy Yuxiang Chen, and have a lovely day. Thank you.